machine's on.
He said we're gonna talk later. He didn't give me time to talk.
Panties on while we're.
Yeah, really.
Buddy, we're gonna have to go to the mat here.
I wanna talk a little bit more about this period between Passover and Pentecost. Let's go to Matthew 28. No, 27, I'm sorry. Verse 45. Now from the sixth hour there was darkness over all the land until the ninth hour. And about the ninth hour Jesus cried with a loud voice, saying, Eli, Eli, lama sabachthani. That is to say, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? And some of them that stood there, when they heard, said, This man calleth for Elijah. And straightway one of them ran and took a sponge and filled it with vinegar and put it on a reed and gave him to drink. And the rest said, Let it be, let us see whether Elijah will come to save him. And Jesus, when he had cried again with a loud voice, yielded up the ghost. And behold, the veil of the temple was rent in two or twain from the top to the bottom, and the earth did quake, and the rocks rent, and graves were opened, and many bodies of the saints which slept arose and came out of the graves after his resurrection, and went into the holy city, and appeared unto many. Now when the centurion and they that were with him watching Jesus saw the earthquake and those things that were done, they feared greatly, saying, Truly, this was the Son of God. Now, we can't imagine that scene. I mean, the sun was dark for 3 hours. Earthquake, temple veil was rent, graves were opened. You gotta wonder what was going on with the people that saw that, especially the leaders that had him crucified and the people that yelled, Crucify him. They had to have it had to have a huge impact in their lives. And they did the counting of the omer. Now, and I'm fascinated by what was going on during the counting of the Omer. The first thing was, at the resurrection, then Jesus appeared to his disciples. And then he was with them for 40 days. Now he had to be seen by others besides the disciples. And again, remember, they were counting the Omer. And then on the 40th day, there's this strange minor feast called Lag Ba'Omer. And on that day, Jesus was ascended, his ascension. Now, there's all kinds of speculation about other things that may have happened in Lag Ba'Omer, but we know in other cultures all kinds of things happen on that day. It usually is about the beginning or first day of the first, or May Day, whatever that is, the first of May. And the cultures, like in the Germanic or in Nordic countries, they used to shoot arrows up into the sky because there was this belief system that demons were released on Lag Ba'Omer. And there was all kinds of celebrations and fires were built and they danced around the maypole on May Day, and there's all kinds of other sort of they're really pagan rituals, but they happened on this day of his ascension. And it says he appeared unto over 500 people. So those 500 people during that period of time, in the midst of counting of the Omer, had to know something major was going on. Something, you know, directly from the hand of God. And anyway, I'm just fascinated by what the response was to the people that were just the normal people and the people that yelled crucify him. Anybody have any thoughts about that? You're chewing.
I think about that a lot, you know, because the Bible leaves so much for you to think about and consider. And, you know, they give these powerful sentences. They don't have any adjectives in them.
Well, anyway, I think it's. I want us to have the experience of maybe by some actual physicality, but at least by empathy with what was going on during the period of the counting of the Omer on this time period between.
You think they did it kind of like we do it?
No, we don't do it at all.
We don't really count.
No, they did it very religiously. Because if they missed the count, then they couldn't participate at Pentecost.
How do they do it? Like, this is day
they
number
a,
21?
They
day
have a calendar.
Each
house had a calendar, an Omer calendar.
Uh-huh.
I was going to get one. I ordered one day, but I decided that was a little too much. Now look what happened at Pentecost. You know, there was the sound of mighty rushing wind, but there wasn't any wind. There was the appearance of fire over those 120 people, but it wasn't really fire. What happened? Where did the sound come from? Time was ripped. Heard the sound of eternity over the heads of those 120 people. And they were in the temple when that happened for the Feast of Pentecost. Then the New Jerusalem came down. But only John saw it. That's what we have any record of. And it had to be on the Feast of Pentecost. Let's go there. Let's look at that. Revelation 21. Well, she was one of the his family that thought he was crazy.
Yeah, that's funny too.
Is it really? Just think of how much things that have happened to him. Well, I know from my standpoint, and how easy it is to let it slide in the memory.
Where does that come from when you make that statement?
Which statement?
That she thought he was crazy, or she was
working. Oh, it says his mother and his family. It's in Mark. Something. I'll look it up for you.
I know that's the answer. You know, we've seen more than most, and yet we still act like we don't.
All right, let's go to Revelation 21. And I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And they're not talking about a new, the word is Gabbin. It just means that a new land, a new place. It has nothing to do with the earth as we understand it. For the first heaven and the first earth were passed away, and there was no more sea. And I, John, saw the holy city, New Jerusalem, coming down from God out of heaven, prepared as a bride adorned for her husband. And I heard a great voice out of heaven saying, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them," or could be in them, "and they shall be his people, and God himself shall be with them," or in them, "and be their God." Now, and we've talked about this many times, but you got to hear this. If the New Jerusalem is the overriding reality over the entire earth, it came down. So heaven came down to earth. And man can't see it because he only looks at. Now, all of time goes from west to east. It's the opposite of what, and so that's why it's passing through, and only that which came from the New Jerusalem can remain in the New Jerusalem. And no, it had to actually come from the temple. Now, as it goes through, as all this time is going passing through, then everything that didn't come, he alone has immortality. So everything else is going into the out, it's going through the west gate and out the east gate. And the east gate is the dump for the New Jerusalem, what we call Gehenna or hell. And it's just the dump. Purifying, sanctifying, and perfect. Nothing. It's the only thing that can stay there is that which came from there.
Like picking up believers on the way?
Well, it's picking up. It's the bride is in the final stages of her formation. That's what Ezekiel saw in Ezekiel 9. He saw the bride from the dead, from the dry bones. All the way back to the beginning, and God saying, "Who told you you were naked? Who told you you needed something? Who told you you have something to do? Who told you that you can't be in total and complete rest? Who told you God wouldn't provide everything if we only rest?" Always, who told you you were naked? The only thing that, the only body that tells you anything is your mind and other people's minds that you believe. I mean, this is majestic, beyond majestic. And we take it as if it were just, you know, a car passing by or something. This is stuff that actually altered the universe. We localize it in our own imagination, and yet we still live as Gentiles. Let's go to Genesis 3. First of all, one verse. Verse 5, the serpent, well, verse 4. "And the serpent said unto the woman, You shall not surely die. For God doth know that in the day you eat thereof, then your eyes shall be opened, and you shall be as gods, knowing good and evil." So the judging for yourself, good and evil, ranking, this is best and that's less than best. That's the only way you can judge good and evil. You can't just look at the extremes. You have to look at how you look at everything. That's why we must become, except you be converted and become as that little child, that darling infant that loses the capacity to think that the condition he's in or anything that's going on should be different than it is. That sounds impossible. But if it's not, if you can repent. And then that innocence is transformed into holiness by all of the antagonism that's going on. And so it's you're no longer putting God to the test for the purposes of proving him. He's putting Christ in you, the cell that you will be in his bride, to that test for the purposes of approving. And we're swallowed up in a mystery. We lose the consciousness of self. And we see the perfection of his holiness wherever we look. Our eyes are open for the first time. We stop walking blindly in the night. The day is come. One of the readings for for Pentecost is the first chapter of Ezekiel, the helicopter chapter. Oh, never mind, that was a stupid reference. But it's the wheel within the wheel, going in one, no matter, everything is going on and moving, but it's all going in one direction, everyone. That's us. That's the body. But the only way that can happen is by your abandonment of self. Taking no thought for your life. No thought for tomorrow. No thought. No thought. No thought. Bringing every thought into captivity to the obedience of Christ. That's the only purpose for being here. And this is all cemented and accentuated in this time period. This is the period between something, but period between eternity and time, or the period between something. It has some other meaning that I can't quite, hasn't grabbed me yet, but it seems to me that as you're moving through the counting of the Omer, you are slowly waking up until you see, finally, you don't even see time anymore, and because you've awoken from the sleep. Stop listening to the evil counselor who has one role, one job, and that's to make you think you must toil. So you will not enter the rest. You can go 666666666 really close to it, but you can never get to 7. Why? The evil counselor continues to keep you along, and you believe him. So let this be. Let time rip during this period. Stop playing in the mud like little children. anybody have any response to any of this, this rant?
I think the counting of the Omer for me anyway, dealing with subconscious, the unseen and unknown.
You can't deal with the unseen and unknown until you deal with the known. You understand
so,
that?
Well, that's not part of what I'm saying.
All right.
I had a couple of things take place yesterday where I physically felt like I turned into my dad, and I experienced the anger that he experienced, and it was incredibly powerful. But I'd always stayed away from it growing up, and I shielded myself from it, so I wasn't absorbed into it. But a couple things took place yesterday where I had unbelievably weird anger trips go on, and my eyes changed and everything. I remember I used to see his eyes and what they did, and it was scary. But I related it to this opening up the home or the count, the things that you think are good and the sources of your experience of life that cause you to behave that you don't know why and act.
Or you're filling up the affliction of your fathers. That's so that revenge
like
can be total.
Yeah. Because I didn't even know there was anything to repent of, but I started seeing it.
It has to be seen that, you know, my father was ended up being a drunk, bum. You know, I got to see that's me.
He probably vowed, "I'll never be that." Or I know I made a few vows.
I didn't do that. I just dismissed him. He was nothing. But I must now see that I am him.
Yeah.
But even back, I have to go back to see. I was Zechariah who they slew. I was the one that slew him. I was the one that caused the blood to seethe in the temple. I was the one that slew Abel. You gotta go all the way back so you fill up the affliction so there's no possibility of you being right about anything in time and space. Your opinions fade. Go out the door, blown away as chaff. Remember, the synagogues were never a building. A synagogue is a word like church. It just means the called out ones. And they never had it. It was illegal for them to have any walls. They had to be on the highest structure, the highest hill around them. So the wind would blow the chaff constantly. That's a great parable for what us should be, so that there is.
That's the theme of Passover, is the freedom.
John sent me a thing that he's doing a story on the history of the Baptist Church. The founder? A guy named Henley or Harris. Anyway, back in the 1600s. As John Fonda's writings, it says the church shouldn't have more than, but it had to have at least 10, but not many more than that, because it had to be enough so that each person knew each other, so there could be no hiding.
Wow.
But he's contrasting that with the $130 million grand opening they had this week of. But again, we are so afraid to be vulnerable. We are so afraid to prophesy, to say what's there, because why? Because you're still in the process of having a governor. You're still judging for yourself good and evil. You may not think it's good and evil in those extremes, but you're judging. You're your own governor. You're afraid to be foolish, or you're afraid to get somebody mad at you, or blah, 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 blah. that's what the perfection of the wine requires, that bubbling. God takes care of the rest. He takes it, and he pours it out into the next vat and leaves the dregs behind, and it just, oh, it never existed. And then it does, and finally at the end of the 7 days. And again, the seven days and the seven, you know, are the 7 days of linear time. I don't care if time lasts 15 billion years. From God's standpoint, it's only 7 days. And that same linear time is the same for all of us. It doesn't matter who, how old you are or anything, because it's just those 7 days going on. In the 6 days, you do your shit. You do your shtick. I didn't even mean to say the S word. I meant to say shtick, but it came out the other one. But at the end of the 7 days, when you've seen the emptiness and everything, then you see, and you see the fullness of God, you can do nothing but enter the rest. But it's not a new 7 days, it's the same 7 days at the creation. You understand what I'm saying? And the same is true with everything. Passover really has 8 days in it, because it includes the Feast of Unleavened Bread. I mean, it just goes on and on and on. Tabernacles, remember, the 7 days of everybody's invited to the feast. And the 8th day is just the small, intimate feast. The marriage supper of the Lamb. It was the same as the same 7 days at the creation. And that's what we have to see, that.
Yeah, there's a great mystery there.
There's only one Passover. There's only one Feast of Tabernacles. There's only one Pentecost. Can everybody sense that? We were with him in his Passover, but we were the ones that killed him. And you go all the way back, and it always ends up that there's none righteous, no, not one. And we end up in this, we end up in total abandonment of self. But it doesn't have to it doesn't have to take long. All right, this time I really don't have anything else to say. Anybody with any other response? Please consider this thing about there's only 7 days of linear time, no matter when it is. Amen?